The next case on our calendar, 04-1550, Cleveland Bar Association versus Alan Perlman. Ms. Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Good morning to the court. I'm Deborah Coleman, appearing for the respondent, Alan Perlman. Your Honors, in this case, you have the opportunity to vindicate the 35-year promise that the small claims court is available for the speedy, expeditious resolution of small dollar claim disputes without attorneys, or to destroy that promise. I'm here this morning to highlight for you reasons why this court should uphold that promise made in 1969 with the adoption of the Small Claims Act and in 1970 with the adoption of the statute here at issue, 1925-17.
Well, counsel, there's always been a little problem with the promise, and that is professionals coming in and using the system. Let's get away from your client for a moment, a collection agency for a doctor coming in and a civilian filing claim after claim after claim. And I don't know for sure, but I would bet a lot of municipal judges would tell you that in terms of volume, they may see the same few folks over and over and over again, rather than, you do get people representing themselves, and that's, that is the great thing about small claims, but the problem is how do you keep it from also becoming a mill available to folks who are essentially doing it for hire.
Justice Pfeiffer, here on behalf of my client, the controlling owner of two LLCs, each of which owns an apartment building of Cleveland Heights.
Right.
I'm not presented with that issue, but frankly, Your Honor, I think that the General Assembly was clear in the Small Claims Act itself that there was no jurisdiction to hear, for example, a claim submitted by a collection agency. There is a clear emphasis in the Small Claims Act on the real party in interest coming before the court to assure that, in the first place, there is a knowledgeable person presenting the information to the court necessary to adjudicate the dispute, and in the second place, so as not to open up your legitimate concern shops set up simply to be intermediaries.
Your client and his wife are the 100%, they have 100% ownership in the.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Perlman owns 99%, is in the managing member of these two LLCs. His wife owns 1%.
Right. Now, if he brought in, if he were the managing partner and had 5% interest in, and other folks, investors, had the other 95%, is that an entirely different case again?
I am advocating for the principle that this court should permit the controlling owner of a business to come in on behalf of a company, because that vindicates my client's interest.
So if he were the general partner and you had a bunch of limited partners, could
come in? A general partner should be able to come in on behalf of limited partners. The statutory language is that any employee or director may come.
Counsel, it doesn't say a partnership. 1925-17 talks about corporations, right?
Yes, Justice O'Connor. The statute talks about corporations.
Then why are we talking about partnerships here?
I was responding to Justice Pfeiffer's question of what principle ought to be established. In regards to a general partnership, any partner could come in. In regard to a limited partnership, I'm submitting that the general partner who has the management authority ought to be able to come in within the spirit of 1925-17.
You're saying as a public policy you'd like to see the legislature enact that. You're not asking the court to do that.
I'm asking the court to do the following, Justice O'Connor, to reject the report of the Board of Commissioners, to dismiss the complaint against my client. And if it chooses to do so, which I think this case presents the occasion, to announce a rule as a matter of this court's supervisory powers over the small claims court or its plenary control over the practice of law, to announce that it is permissible to avoid any issues arising in the future for the controlling owner of an Ohio entity to come to small claims court, just small claims court, to present a claim or defend a claim made against that entity.
Does the statute as it's now written seem to impair the court's ability to decide what is the unauthorized practice of law? Because as I read it, the statute does say that the corporation, through any bona fide officer or employee, may file and present its claim or defense, which in ordinary circumstances would, of course, be practicing law, representation of another. Do you see any conflict in the statute as it's now written?
Justice Lanzinger, I acknowledge that there is a conflict, and I do not here dispute the contention that there may be constitutional infirmities in that statute to the extent that it purports to define the practice of law. But I don't think that that ends the discussion. I think in this case, as in the comp management case, you don't end the question with does the agency or does the legislature have the authority to get into the business of defining what the practice of law is. I think one must go further and ask, in the facts and circumstances of this particular type of adjudication, is the public interest served by this court's exercising its discretion to prohibit anyone other than a lawyer from acting in that venue, or to permit, because of the particular circumstances, non-lawyers to act within that venue? I believe in the unique situation of the small claims court, this court ought to exercise its discretion through its powers of superintendence or its powers to govern the practice of law to permit the kind of activity that my client engaged in. I want to identify exactly what he did because it's so limited, I think it doesn't even deserve to be called the practice of law. He did three things. He filled out a form provided by the Cleveland Heights Small Claims Court. I'm showing you one of several exhibits that are part of the submission of the respondent to this court, the 13 complaints. He verified the complaint. He didn't sign it as if he were the attorney. What he did was provide a verification, which was attested to by the clerk of the court. We have verifications done by non-lawyers all the time. We expect verifications to come from non-lawyers because they're the people possessed of the facts. And he showed up at court. Now, whenever I represent a corporation, Your Honor, whenever any attorney in Ohio represents a corporation, some individual has to show up at court in order to provide the testimony concerning the claim or defense of that body. So that's all he did. He filled out a form, he verified, and he showed up. And that, I submit to you, is not the unauthorized practice of law, is not the practice of law, and is the kind of conduct that gets the job done in small claims court, is consistent with the public interest, and ought to be permitted by this court.
Counsel, I'm coming back to the, I guess, the larger picture concern that's not in this case, or I mean, I'll grant you, your case seems different to me because your client owns the whole thing, or he and his wife do. But let's assume somebody has a business in which they take over bad accounts, just buy them, you know, 10 cents on the dollar, and then they go to small claims court and try to collect them on all the small ones, and they're not a lawyer. Should we permit that practice?
Your Honor, the statute creating the jurisdiction of the small claims court prohibits claims being brought by assignees. It would not permit your claims collector or your factor to come into court based on those claims. So this court need not reach that issue. It's not simply my case that does not present the issue. The statutory scheme of the small claims court does not present the issue. And I submit to you, Justice Piper, need not concern the court if
it is inclined
to.
Counsel, as long as we're you're arguing a public policy result here, or the court taking a look at 1925-17 and making some changes or drafting a rule or whatever. Would you agree that the prohibition against non-lawyers engaging in cross-examination, argument, or other acts of advocacy would be an important thing to retain, or to, would you do away with those limitations on the non-lawyer?
I am not asking this court to do away with those limitations. I think that that statute is helpful in indicating the parameters of appropriate conduct of non-lawyers in a court. And in the small claims court, you have magistrates who are required to be members of the bar, who are there to assure proper conduct by non-lawyers when permitted to appear. So I'm not advocating the necessity to permit a non-lawyer, including my client, to engage in argument or cross-examination. There is certain informality in the small claims court, and I don't bring you an illustration of what happens there, but I think we can count on the magistrates of the court to assure that the proceedings are conducted appropriately and expeditiously in the interest of justice.
Counsel, if I could characterize what you're saying, it's almost as if a corporate representative ought to be allowed to perform certain ministerial tasks for purposes of small claims, and what you're suggesting is not allowing the corporate representative really to represent in an attorney capacity the corporation.
I hesitate, Justice Lanziger, just because I've never been quite sure what ministerial means. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, anyone who comes into small claims court to present a claim testifies and responds to whatever questions are put by the magistrate or the judge to speak to the issue. That may well be beyond the scope of ministerial, which, as I've said, I've never quite understood.
Because you are talking then about actually being the witness for the corporation.
Absolutely, and there can't be any objection to that. And in a sense, the officer or owner is representing the corporation because the corporation must be embodied somehow in the court.
Would you allow that representative then to question the other side? In a small claim situation, the magistrate, for example, as you say, very informally, may then say, all right, Mr. So-and-so, do you have any questions of the other side here? Do you want to put any questions to your opponent?
Your Honor, I don't think that it would be amiss to do that. It is not dissimilar from permitting a jury to ask questions incident to trying to determine what the facts are. But it is not a necessary part of my submission to this court. Mr.
Would
Chief
there be
Justice,
limits, would there be limits on the percentage of ownership or agents or other officers' ability to engage in such activity as you're describing, filling out complaints and appearing in a small claims court? Don't we start ourselves on a slippery slope here? We agree with your position?
Mr. Justice O'Donnell, I don't believe it's a slippery slope. In terms of my client, he is the controlling owner.
Well, I understand that,
and
but
that
the next case we're going to look
purpose.
At is someone who's the treasurer or someone who is a 60% owner or someone who is an agent for that owner because that person couldn't make it that day. And pretty soon we're going to have friends coming in on behalf of the owner. But he signed it and presented it.
Don't we
start ourselves on a road that we have to be very cautious about what we're doing here?
I think caution is absolutely in order, Justice O'Donnell. But I think the statute indicates parameters, that is, a salaried employee or officer. And my situation involving a controlling owner is clear. And if this court announces a policy, frankly, it has permitted this small claims court practice to go on for 35 years. There is some uncertainty now as to what is to be done. So an announcement of a policy is in order, and the court can articulate that as it deems appropriate to avoid concerns in the future.
Any suggestions that you think we should put into place?
I think that the statute, 1925-17, provides good guidance, as does the procedures established by the Cleveland Heights Municipal Court. For example, setting up this form and avoiding the necessity of a signature in blank, but simply calling for verification by the person who is submitting the claim. I ask this court to reject the report of the board, to dismiss the complaint, and if it chooses to announce a rule to clarify that the controlling owners of Ohio businesses can come to small claims court to prosecute their claims or defend them. Thank you. I'll reserve the remaining time, if I may, for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Coleman. Mr. Harvey.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Michael P. Harvey, representing the Cleveland Bar Association, the relator in this case. Your Honors, we're here to seek affirmance of the report of the Board of Commissioners finding that Mr. Perlman engaged in the unauthorized practice of law by appearing on at least 13 different occasions in Cleveland Municipal Court, not an administrative agency as in comp management, pleading his case, representing another, which is his corporation, which he was enabled to set up via the statutory scheme allowing corporations and LLCs to set up, and the commission's report was absolutely correct, and we'd ask that that be affirmed.
Mr. Harvey, let me ask you, the issue raised by Ms. Coleman that the form in the small claims court that is in Cleveland Heights Municipal Court is required, that all Mr. Perlman did was verify the facts that I assume he wrote in to the statement of the claim. Is that, that's the practice of law? What makes it the practice of law? Is it the fact that he has stated the facts that seem to indicate a liability on the part of another party, or that we've got, says plaintiff here and complainant's claim? What makes this a practice of law?
Your Honor, first I'd like to answer that question by making sure the court is correct that we are here on a stipulated record that counsel for the respondent and I agree to. That doesn't mean at all that there isn't more to this that's not in the record before this court. Second of all, to answer your question directly, Your Honor, I've said repeatedly, as long as I've been involved in the unauthorized practice of law issues, that what my training and my licensure allows me to do is to be able to see a set of facts in however simple form that a client gives them to me or however simple form they're on, and understand the legal significance that is behind those set of facts, whether it be in small claims or any other court or administrative agency. That's what I am here trained to do, because I've gone through the proper procedures as a licensed lawyer to do that. And I'm here to say, Judge, when somebody puts something on a piece of paper, on a pleading, if you will, at any level of any court, which this court has never allowed before and should not allow here, that is, in essence, practicing law, because there's an interpretation, an understanding behind those words or facts suggesting what law should be applied by the court. The second point I'd like to raise to the court, Your Honors, is that Revised Code Section 1925.17 is unconstitutional to the extent that it allows folks who are not lawyers to represent another in court. And I'd like
Counsel,
to make...
Counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
There are public policies issues, obviously, behind this to consider, like we did in the comp case. I want you to address two of them. One is, how do we prevent the cost of all of these cases being driven up dramatically by requiring an attorney to represent a business in every one of them? And second public policy issue is, how do we prevent an unfair advantage now to all of these pro se defendants or pro se litigants that want to appear against or are sued by a corporation? How do we keep them from being put at a disadvantage, because now they're, instead of going up against another person, they're going up against a skilled attorney who knows how to use the system?
Your Honor, as to the first point regarding the revamping issue, Your Honor, first of all, just so this court is entirely clear, on our point, which is this record does not contain any evidence, as the comp management case did, as to the alleged costs would be associated with changing.
We can take judicial notice of the fact that if you have to hire attorneys, you're going to have costs. That's common sense. You don't even have to argue that.
Sure, Your Honor, but I mean, and without arguing semantics, you know, if an attorney is willing to take a case to small claims court for $50, is, you know, $50 multiplied by 100 cases in you know, Cleveland Heights Municipal Court on any particular day? Is that the cost we're talking about? Because it's, in my view, both sides can hire counsel. Both sides can negotiate fee agreements with their clients to limit the fees based on the kind of representation or time that's necessary. And
but
that's the way the system...
Small claims court was created just to avoid what you're talking about should now be the practice. It was created so that litigants did not need to have attorneys. And you're suggesting now that we require it, and they only charge $50, so it's hardly reality.
Your Honor, and I want to get back, Your Honor, to your second point, but Your Honor, first of all, we're talking here about a case of a corporation going in to represent, an agent, non-licensed lawyer agent of a corporation going in to represent his corporation. It's not the pro se person who can go in and represent him or herself.
Counsel, doesn't 1925-17 authorize that?
Well, that's what we're talking about, Your Honor. That's what I'm
saying. So you would like us, do we need to declare that unconstitutional?
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest to you that you don't have to do that or do anything. I'd simply, of course, the Cleveland Bar simply wants this case affirmed and cost assessed to Perlman. But because of the Cleveland Bar Association versus Piccolo decision, wherein this court stated, well, you know what, this is a case of first impression to us, as is this case. This statute has not gotten before this court before today, and we're now asking this court to say, excuse me, but constitutionally, the General Assembly overstepped its rights.
With separation of powers.
Separation of powers, Your Honor.
Provided we don't get to the constitutional issue and we don't declare it unconstitutional, isn't what Mr. Perlman did governed and allowed by 1925.17?
Your Honor, I would agree with that. I would agree, yes.
So statutorily, the respondent here followed the law, and we would have to declare this unconstitutional in order for you to sustain the findings here, correct?
Your Honor, I don't believe that. I believe that this court can uphold the board's determination on the long history of finding unauthorized practice of law when corporations go in and represent another. I think that can be done without finding this statute necessarily unconstitutional.
How can we do that?
I just think the court can make that decision because this court has the constitutional authority to regulate both the practice of law and all the courts in Ohio. Your Honor, can I get back to the second point, which was the unfair advantage? Your Honor, you know, one of the things that counsel respondent made mention of the fact that the magistrates or municipal court judges are actively involved in the process, which, by the way, is very similar to the hearing examiners in the con management case. And the process is that they ask more questions that would normally be the kind of cross-examination that would be not allowed, and that's why that process goes forward. In my view, I don't believe it would be an unfair advantage. This court in Union Savings back in 1970 addressed the equal protection due process issues relating to whether it's unfair for one party to not have a counsel or one party to have a lawyer going into a case. I mean, if somebody doesn't choose to use a lawyer, then that's too bad. This court in Union Savings.
Somebody doesn't choose to use a lawyer. It implies that this person really is exercising good judgment. If they have a corporation with a lawyer suing in small claims court and they don't go out and get their own lawyer, tough. That's kind of what you're saying, right?
That's exactly what I'm saying, Your Honor. And the reason I'm saying it is because that is the process of advocacy that we have in our Ohio courts.
And then, counsel, on the flip side, you say that the other remedy is Mr. Perlman and his wife can disband the corporation and they can own these properties in their own names, then he could walk into court. So he's prohibited from using a legitimate corporate format for the conduct of his business, and as he would be entitled to at any time, because he can't walk into small claims court? This is the trade-off? You get to go into small claims court provided you don't want to use the statutorily allowed business format?
You know, Your Honor, you're absolutely right. It's exactly what I'm saying. And I'm saying that because there's a long history of this court saying that corporations that are represented by non-lawyers, their actions are nullity and void. There's a long history of requiring lawyers to represent corporations and not allow agents to come in on behalf of corporations. And this court itself, in 1970, Union Savings, addressed that due process equal protection issue as to the point of, as long as the courts are open to everybody, that's the due process, they can all go there and say their piece. And corporations are not natural citizens. They are statutorily created and therefore do not have the same rights as citizens, which is what this court said in Union Savings. And, Your Honor, if the court is all concerned about the third issue, which is bear with me 1 second, the fines, if you will, or the, this court in Toledo Bar versus Chelsea just recently allowed civil penalties for the pre-penalty conduct, such as that engaged in by Mr. Perlman. The Cleveland Bar's position has never been necessarily that that's our position here. The main objective here is satisfied with a prospective injunction against the kind of conduct that Mr. Perlman has admitted to engage in and cost assessed to Mr. Perlman. The fact that that Toledo Bar versus Chelsea has been decided in favor penalties or fines for pre-penalty activities doesn't necessarily concern us. I'm concerned with the broader societal objections, which is maintaining the long history of decisions in this area since the court's decision, Land Abstract Title versus Dworkin, 71 years ago, holding that lawyers who are licensed and regulated by this court should appear in Ohio courts only. And that, you know, we get into, you know, Justice O'Donnell made reference to the slippery slope argument, and I'm here to say to you that and I'm very concerned as an 18-year veteran of Ohio courts, and I'm very concerned about where you begin to draw the line between the simple filling out of forms, as respondent mentioned, which I think is more than that, to be honest with you, and the simple appearing in court, as the respondent described.
Well, we've had this statute for 35 years, and we had a slippery slope, in your opinion, over these 35 years?
Your Honor, the fact that municipal court decisions of that nature don't get appealed very often, I don't think should suggest to this court that the issues are not out there. We, as the Cleveland Bar, only deal with what comes to us in terms of complaints. Our committee investigated this and brought it forward. We realized that this is the first time this particular statute has come.
Does Mr. Perlman represent a slippery slope item to you? Somebody who's abused the system and gone down that slippery slope?
Anybody in his position would be of concern to me, Your Honor. The fact that any corporation...
Does he represent someone going down that slippery slope?
Yes, Your Honor. To answer your question in a simple word, yes. Because anybody who takes advantage of setting up a corporation understands that there's advantages and disadvantages. One of the disadvantages may be that that person cannot go in as an agent, unlicensed lawyer on behalf of that entity, and he or she should understand that, and should, the precedent has been there for years. In terms of, though, the larger question, which is, when do you start distinguishing between the simple filling out of forms and the full-blown advocacy of going in and cross-examining? I mean, the line would be so blurred. I think that a general, straightforward, across-the-board rule is absolutely crucial here. And this court, as the respondent suggested, has that opportunity to make that rule very
clear. Do you have
any
evidence that magistrates are allowing all that cross-examination that you talk about?
Your Honor, there is no evidence in this stipulated record on that point. No. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Harvey. Ms. Coleman, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
This court has ruled that the determination of the unauthorized practice of law should be made on a case-by-case basis. I submit to you, in this case, you should find that there has not been the unauthorized practice of law. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.